Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to OVW Overview. I'm Dean Hill alongside Trent Van Dries, the Switchmaster, Larry Goodman, and the Persian pariah himself, Muhammad Ali Vaez. Got a lot of exciting things to talk about over the next hour or so, so let's kick things off and pitch to the MC himself, TVD, Trent Van Dries.
Wow. I can die now, guys. Isn't that great, Dean? Golden tones of Dean Hill bringing me in on this Sunday afternoon, April 15th, 2012. Welcome, everybody listening live or on the archives, OVW Overview.
Yeah,
you've already heard our guest, the legendary Dean Hill, the voice of OVW since the beginning, is our guest today. This is going to be a great show. And, boy, that gave me goosebumps right there, Dean. Thank you for doing that. And Larry, how are you doing today? I don't know what to say.
Well, my day has been made by that introduction.
That was awesome. Boy, oh boy, that's how a pro does it right there. And Larry is our other friend on the line.
Yes, Borat himself, I think, is on the line.
Yes,
Borat,
I'm here. The Persian pariah, as Mr. Dean Hill would like to say, is here. I've been driving for 13 hours straight, giving my valuable time to call into this podcast and grace you with my presence. And Dean Hill wants to give me a disrespectful introduction like that. He's trying to downplay me, say that people don't like me, when, as a matter of fact, I'm one of the most beloved superstars in OVW history.
As a matter of fact, Muhammad, I had a friend of mine from years ago that I understand had a personal hello to you the other night. His name was Sergeant Slaughter.
Oh!
He's a cheater.
Come on, Ollie.
What are you talking about? Come on. I'm telling you, I'm driving back from New York. I face Sergeant Slaughter along with my longtime tag team partner, Omar Akbar. Sergeant Slaughter cheated. He took unfair advantages. First off, he called us a communist, and clearly we're not communists. I'm an educated liberal. I am in no shape, way, or form a communist. But Sergeant Slaughter pulled every tactic out of the book. He tried to intimidate us. He, you know, bended the rules. He pulled my luscious hair. He complimented me on my swimmer's build, though. We are 2 weeks out from the contest. But regardless of that, Sergeant Slaughter was nothing short of miserable to deal with. But I'm pretty used to that, being surrounded by Dean Hill every week now. So, you know, it's business as usual, unfortunately.
Is Ben Hameen in the car with you?
No, Ben Hameen was left in New York to tend to matters there. Ben Hameen is not in the car. However, he sends his regards, and he says he can't wait to shave your stupid mustache again, Dean.
I did make a phone call to another friend of mine. Might look in your rearview mirror. Is there a blue Ford pickup truck behind you?
Blue Ford pickup truck. You know, I know you're juiced in with all the locals here, Dean, so it wouldn't surprise me, but no, there is no blue pickup truck behind me.
Just keep your eyes open for it.
Oh, man. See, you can't mess with the law. You can't mess with the law.
the best thing about this is, Trent, basically you put that in his mind, and you know there's at least 100 blue pickup trucks in the world. So now every blue pickup truck that he sees between here and wherever he calls home, he'll have something in his mind.
And I'm guessing
I don't see how Kenny Bowen deals with you, Dean.
And I'm guessing, Dean, as it gets closer to Kentucky, he will see more and more pickup trucks.
We got five or six of them waiting for him at the state line.
Yeah, so, you know, Ali, you know, your whole diatribe here, so basically you just went the long way around to tell us you lost again, right? Am I right?
I stay busy for a guy who loses all the time, don't I, Trent?
I would say that you do. And Ali, I just wanted to let you know before the show went on the air today that I let the guys know that you've been driving since 1 a.m., driving all night long, and we said that we were going to be especially nice to you today, did we not, guys? We're going to be very nice to you today, Ali, just so you know.
Well, I appreciate that. It's about time. It's a breath of fresh air, quite frankly. And, you know, I am just I'm sick and tired of being discriminated against. I mean, nobody sings my accolades. Nobody sings my praises. Nobody talks about how I'm the only man to ever face Dean Hill in a steel cage and survive. Nobody ever talks about how I'm the longest reigning television champion this company has ever seen, despite the fact, Trent, that you like to point out that I haven't won a match on television since December of 2011, yet you find me on your television set every week.
Well, I think, Trent, like he said, nobody says that. They don't basically have to because he says it enough for everyone to hear.
Right, right. Well, you know what? We're going to jump around some, but since you guys have broached it, Dean, I want you to get into it. I want you to tell us the story from start to finish of you losing your mustache because I moved to Louisville like 2.5 years ago, so I missed some of that time. I watched some of it on YouTube, but how did this all start?
Well, it started, Ben Hameen and the insurgency had made their way into OVW and was running roughshod, as my grandfather used to say, over a lot of the competition there. They got involved with a young man, that a fantastic young man, and he no longer wanted to be a part of their crew. He left their crew and had control of their flag for a period of time. He asked me if I would kind of watch over it. And while he was encountering these men, it led itself to a point where Ben Hameen decided that he felt as though he needed to apologize to me. He offered me a gift. I very hesitantly accepted it. I was very leery of it. At the time, I was joined at the TV desk not only by Kenny Bolin, but a very good young man that's a fantastic announcer with OVW named Timmy Baltimore. Tim has left to go into the comedy circuit right now and is doing great across the United States in the comedy circuit. A shout out to Timmy B. If you're out there, son, we love you. And it was a situation where as I opened this gift, that it turned out to be a steel rod, a spike, if you will. And as I was trying to figure out what in the wide world of sports this was all about, a despicable person come running out of the back and laid a clothesline across my back. I did not get the opportunity to see him coming. And I went face first onto the concrete. At this time, Ben Hameen took that steel spike and laid my my head open. Blood pretty much flowed everywhere that day. Push had just come to shove. And Danny Davis, the legendary nightmare himself, decided that he was going to fire Muhammad Ali Vaez and Ben Hameen and the rest of the insurgency, Omar Akbar and all of them. And I decided that, if I was going to get my hands on Ben Hameen, that the only thing that that would stop that is if, in fact, Danny fired them and ran them off to the rock that they crawled out from under. I came out and lobbied. I I say lobbied, I probably should say screamed and yelled and demanded. Basically what happened was Danny fired them. The crowd said, fire them, fire them, fire them. I came out and asked for them to be reinstated, and the fans said, reinstate them, reinstate them, reinstate them. And so Danny did. He didn't like it, but he did. And I demanded a one-on-one encounter with Ben Hameen. I had him basically on his knees begging for forgiveness. I'm not a professional wrestler, but I was a Louisville police officer for 25 years, and I've been in my fair share of altercations. And as I was poised over the top of him, preparing to let the crowd determine what kind of fate would come to Ben Hameen, a despicable human being, the same despicable human being that came from behind me and laid me out with the clothesline that started all this, that same despicable human being came from behind me and gave me a low blow in the male and put me down on my knees. And basically at that point, Ben Hameen, as they said in the old days, stomped a mud hoe in me and walked it dry. And he then, this same despicable human being, put me in the camel clutch, and Ben Hameen pulled out scissors that Miss Serena pulled out, if I'm recalling this correctly, because I'm recalling from seeing the film footage of it, and right. Shaved off the handlebar mustache that was my... that was Dean Hill. I had that handlebar mustache for 38 years. My wife had never seen me. My daughter, my grandchildren had never seen me without that. And they shaved it off of me in the ring, which led to the steel cage, the shave in the cage, where I did get my reward.
Now, is this despicable human being on the line? Ali, what's your side of all this?
But, all right, look, I know this was a few years ago, and
right,
I'm
right.
sure by this point, cooler heads have prevailed.
Right.
There was a lot of hurt feelings at the time, so I just want to give my honest interpretation of what happened. Dean Hill is one of those Republican guys who voted for George Bush, and he's the root of all of the problems in our country today.
Is that blue truck behind you yet?
I'm sure it's coming now. I'm sure it's coming real soon now that I mentioned George Bush on the podcast. But regardless, Dean Hill is one of these rich Republican establishment types who wants to cheerlead and wants to talk a bunch of smack to a hardworking immigrant such as myself. He wants to hold me down. And, you know, Dean Hill, he picked one too many times to cheerlead. He talked a bunch of smack, and you know what? Ben Hameen, myself, and Omar Akbar, the original insurgency with Serena, we put him down. We put him in his place. But then Danny Davis wanted to get involved and threatened to fire me for the first time. And, you know, all heck broke loose. And the next thing I know, Dean Hill's fighting Ben Hameen. Neither of them are trained wrestlers. It's very stressful on me and all my family and all my swimmers' bills. And then the next thing I know, we're in a steel cage match and we sold out the Davis Arena. So, I mean, that's kind of what happened. But the actual match itself is blurry to me because I'm pretty sure Dean Hill had us drugged or something. I mean, I don't recall the actual specifics. I just know a lot of shenanigans took place, and at the end of the day, Dean Hill doesn't have a mustache, so I guess we did him a favor now, didn't we?
I think he's... are your fingers okay? It's been a couple of years. I'm sure they recovered because basically, Trent, he spent the majority of the time with his fingers in the steel cage trying to climb the hell out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't think that happens, but, you know, I guess we'll have to go back to the archival footage, which you can get at obwrestling.com for
$9.99. Oh, wow, what a plug that was.
That was pretty sweet, wasn't it?
Nice. But as much as I hate to say it, Dean, you know, you could have unwittingly given Ali some training for his future case match against Michael Hayes.
Well, no, I don't think that. I guess you could make the case for it, but at the same time, I think it was inevitable. Muhammad Ali Vaez is the kind of person that is going to push the envelope whenever he can. And whether it was Dean Hill or the American hero Michael Hayes or anybody else that he may encounter along the way, the only way to make sure that Muhammad Ali Vaez is meeting you in a one-on-one situation, that you don't have to worry about any outside shenanigans, that you don't have to worry about some clever plot, or at least not worry about it as much, is to actually put him inside of a steel cage.
But he was clever enough to have people coming up through the cage. You got to give it to him.
Again, you know, the man. I hate to give you too much credit, but at the same time, much like the chess master that he is, he does have a tendency to think two and three moves ahead.
Right.
You know, Persians roll deep, Dean.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. It was two voices at once.
I'm sorry, Dean. Persians roll deep. So, I mean, you mess with me, you're going to mess with my family. You're going to mess with my blood. Guys like Omar Akbar, a guy who I've been tag teaming with for 5 years now, he knows me like the back of my hand. So, you know, you mess with the, you poke the bear, or actually, let me back up. You poke the bull, you better be prepared for the horns, Dean. And you got the horns, my friend. You got the horns.
And usually when I'm dealing with you, I'm used to what comes out of the other end of it.
And Ali, we were talking off air, isn't it kind of ironic that Dean's on the show today when, like, this weekend is when your insurgency got back together in New York? It's kind of ironic, isn't it?
I suppose so. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter if it's Dean Hill or if it's in New York. Whenever the insurgency gets together, the building sells out. So I guess it was a good thing that we got to humble Dean Hill, not necessarily old country style, but we did humble Dean Hill nonetheless. He does stand before you with a naked face, which in our culture is a sign of shame, especially when it's brought upon in such a disrespectful manner as we delivered. And I'll let Dean have his day in the sun. He did win the shave in the cage, and he did humiliate Bin Amin and shave his beard. But, you know, if you were to look at the file footage from this weekend where Dean's old crony Republican buddy, Sergeant Slaughter, and Hacksaw Jim Duggan were cheating us out of our victories in Waterston and Rome, New York, Bin Amin's beard is back, and it is back with a vengeance. So,
I have to ask this, if you don't mind, Trent. Muhammad,
yeah,
what was it you said about the beard and your culture, that it's a sign of what, to be clean-shaven?
To have another man shave you is a sign of incredible disrespect.
Have another man shave you. Okay, all right.
There's nothing wrong with being a beautiful man, eye candy as you will, with a swimmer's build and a clean face. That's not shameful at all. That's actually marketable. However, in your case, Dean, you were shaved against your will. Even though we did you a favor, it was against your will. That's why it was an incredible sign of disrespect that we were glad to hand upon you, because, again, you and your Republican cronies are the reason why we have all the problems that we have today, trying to, you know, make an honest living in this country, in the Kentuckiana area, if you will.
Oh.
And yes, there's a blue pickup truck behind me now, Dean, so I guess your cronies are closing in on me as we speak.
Hold on. Give me just 1 second here, Trent. I'm on the other phone. Hey, Billy Bob? Billy Bob, hold off for a little while. He's actually on the radio now, okay? All right. Go ahead, Trent.
Wow. You better watch Tommy.
I'm sure Halliburton has helicopters following me right now. I mean, these guys are all connected.
Wow, Larry, we got something going here today, Larry, don't we? Boy, this could be an international incident before this is over. So, Dean, let's go back to your beginnings. Were you a pro wrestling fan as a kid, and how did you first get involved with professional wrestling?
I knew of professional wrestling as a kid. I came up in a small town in southern Indiana, about 15 miles northeast of Evansville, called Boonville, Indiana. My grandfather was a mule skinner in the coal company there. When they went into learning diesel power, they sent him to diesel power school and learned how to do engines. And my father and uncle and my grandfather built and raced USAC sprint cars. So I spent a lot of my time at racetracks when I was a young child, but there was only, I date myself here, but there was only the one television in our family, and it was at my grandfather's house, and every Friday and Saturday we would go over there. On Friday nights we would watch the fights, Rocky Marciano and Sugar Ray and all those, and then we would occasionally watch a wrestling match, and that was back in the days of Dick the Bruiser and Gorgeous George, and I remember bits and pieces of that. But then as we moved up here into the Louisville area when I was in the seventh grade and got away from professional wrestling, and I joined the police department pretty much straight out of high school at the age of 18. The city of Louisville had lowered the age requirement. They were losing a lot of police officers that had come on after the Korean War, and they had all done their 20 years and were getting ready to retire. And So President Nixon had just went volunteer army, was bringing the troops back from Vietnam, and decided that if they lowered the age requirement from 21 to 18, that they'd get a lot of the troops, MPs, that were coming back to Fort Knox and leaving the military. And I was one of 13 young men that actually came straight out of high school and joined the police department. And could you imagine being 18 years old and them giving you a gun and a badge and the keys to a Dodge 440 Polara?
No.
So actually, after a few years of being a police officer, I started working concerts as an off-duty job for Andy Frayne's security as a off-duty police officer. They had to hire a police officer to have somebody with arrest powers during that. And from that, I started running security for Louisville Gardens. I ran that for about 15 years, and actually been in the same room with Frank Sinatra, sold a gun to Steven Tyler of Aerosmith. I was a bodyguard for Barbara Mandrell for a while, and had a steak dinner with a guy named Fred Bear that no one knew who he was as Fred Bear until he legally changed his name to Ted Nugent. And every Tuesday night we would walk what you would consider to be the bad guys to the ring. I walked Hulk Hogan to the ring the first time he ever walked into Louisville Gardens as the Hulk. I walked Andy Kaufman to the ring when he was doing his deal with Jerry Lawler. And one Tuesday night, the ring announcer wasn't able to be there, and Jeff Jarrett's grandmother, the matriarch of USWA, what was then CWA, or the Mid-South Memphis Wrestling, as they would call it. I had endeared myself to her, and Miss Christine said that, well, Dean, the ring announcer can't be here, and you've got a interesting voice. Do you want to be the ring announcer tonight? And I was kind of a class clown and never had a problem really talking in front of anybody. So I said, well, sure, it'd be a hoot. So I got in the ring and did it. And the next week, at the end of the night, they said, well, the guy can't be here next week either. That came off pretty good. You want to do it again? So I actually went home and turned on the television and paid attention to Lance Russell and Gordon Solie and Mean Gene and some of those guys, and got a little bit better idea how to represent myself in the ring, and came back the next week and just lowered my voice down just a little bit and put a little bit of "and in this corner." And at the end of the night, Miss Christine came up to me and said, how would you like to do this every week for us? And that was the beginning. It was August of 1988, and that was the beginning of my wrestling career.
Wow, amazing. Now, going back to the security, who was the hardest to protect, and do you have any stories of, like a riot or anything like that on your hands in Louisville?
Probably one of the hardest to protect, because you never knew what he was going to do, was Joe LaDuke. He was truly a loose cannon. I remember a promo on television one time where he was actually sitting there on Memphis TV talking about how he was going to get his hands on Jerry Lawler, and he had an axe in his hand, and he started sawing that axe across his own arm. And, I mean, he was...
Yes.
Cutting his arm open, and you could probably YouTube it. There's Google it or something, how they have this all archived nowadays. But Joe LeDuc was a wild man. Sid Vicious was a pretty wild person. I saw somebody throw a beer on Sabu one night and saw him wade into a crowd. I saw somebody attack Hillbilly Jim one time, and Hillbilly Jim was a great guy. I mean, he was the kind of man that you really had to go out of your way to upset him. And this guy, I don't know what the deal was, but he threw a beer right in the face of Hillbilly Jim, and Hillbilly Jim basically just parted the seats. And all the seats were basically locked together, and he was just stepping over them. This guy was trying to get away and running through the crowd and couldn't, and Hillbilly Jim pretty much knocked him in the next week. But as far as any big, huge brawls with the crowd got out of control, probably the biggest one I remember was a match between Jerry the King Lawler and the superstar Bill Dundee. And they had actually wrestled up into the arena. They had a part of Louisville Gardens sectioned off for a concert that was coming later on that in a few days at Louisville Gardens. And the crowd up in the upper area of Louisville Gardens there was a rope up there, which, you know, the rope ain't going to hold anybody back if they decided they want to go past it. It was just there to keep the honest men honest, so to speak. And Lawler and Dundee were in one of their things that it was really no explaining it. They were just having their issues at the time, and it had boiled over to the point where they were in Jim Ross would call a slobber knocker, and they had gotten themselves up into the rafters almost at Louisville Gardens. And this was one of the times that I kind of endeared myself to Miss Jarrett. I was strictly security back then. I wasn't doing any ring announcing or anything at that point. And they'd gotten up in a restricted area, and the entire crowd had started to run up in the upper sections, and it started to run over towards them. And I kind of ran up in between them and the crowd and tried to stop it as best I could. I actually, once the security got up there with me, we were able to hold the crowd back. But that was as close to losing the crowd as we ever really came.
And I'm glad you mentioned Joe LeDuc, Dean, because when I was a kid, I grew up watching the AWA in Green Bay, Wisconsin. In 1975, when I was 10 years old, Joe LeDuc scared the living insurgency out of me. He was the scariest wrestler I've ever seen. So the fact he was a loose cannon doesn't surprise me at all, because for a kid, he was positively frightening for a kid, at least for me. So what a scary man that was. Do you have any good or funny stories about your days as a ring announcer for USWA?
I'm sorry, I missed just the first part of what you said.
Do you have any good or funny stories about your days as a ring announcer for USWA?
Well, for USWA,
I mean, like 88, 89, 90, in that area.
Right. I was really just in awe of everything going on around me at the time. A lot of the what would be considered perhaps funny stories, especially little tidbits that you get to know when you're in the locker room and stuff like that. I really don't know a lot of that stuff because I tried to keep myself out of the locker room. You got to keep in mind that I was still a badge and gun carrying Louisville police officer at that time. And some of the guys were very, very good to me and embraced me. Others were still leery of me because of me being a police officer. So out of respect to them, I kind of stayed away from the locker room part of it. And that was out of advice from a gentleman that mentored me when I first started, named Frank Morrell. Frank was a wrestler from back in the day of Gorgeous George and Lou Thesz. He was part of the Morrell brothers. He was originally the French Angel. And
right.
Frank was one of our referees at the time and kind of took me under his wing and helped me through that. I do remember, I'll tell you a funny story about Joe Wheeler, and Joe is a referee for OVW right now, and
right.
goes back with me to the day as how Joe Wheeler got his start in OVW. A gentleman by the name of Randy Hales, who is a promoter out of the Memphis area and Arkansas area.
Right.
Randy promoted USWA for some period of time there towards the end of USWA. And Randy and Frank Morrell got into a conversation about who was faster running-wise. And Frank Morrell was an old veteran, big barrel-chested, bald-headed man. And Randy Hales was about 6'3" and probably weighed 150 pounds soaking wet. And Frank just figured he could outrun Randy Hales, and so they decided that they were going to run across the back room of Louisville Gardens, which was about, maybe 120 feet long. And but that was from a concrete wall to a concrete wall. And so they got down in three-point position and two, three, one, go, and they took off running across this room. Well, Frank was doing a heck of a job. Randy was barely able to keep up with Frank, and Frank's running like a traditional runner would, and Randy was on the edge of flailing a little bit. Frank was actually looked like he was going to win this race. Well, Frank tripped at the very end and could not control himself and went head first into this concrete wall. So you could basically imagine running with all of your might and taking a head first dive into a concrete wall. Well, he put his hand up at the very last second, and it sounded like somebody hit a watermelon with a baseball bat.
Oh.
And Frank Morrell's head split open. He walked up. I mean, he hit the floor, turned around, and you could see the little bluebirds flying around his head in a circle,
yeah,
and the stars and all this stuff. And he looked down, and he broke his right wrist. His hand was actually pointed the opposite direction. It was a little gross to look at. And they didn't have another referee that night, and Joe Wheeler was there, and that was the beginning of Joe Wheeler's wrestling career, because they had to take Frank Morrell to the hospital, and Joe Wheeler got an opportunity to be a referee that night.
No kidding.
No kidding.
Wow. Right.
I guess more stories about some of the people that started out there. One of the fun things we used to do was we used to do wrestling on Tuesday nights, and then the guys that got along together I'd pick them up on Wednesday morning, and we'd go play 18 holes of golf. So
wow.
I've actually had some fun stories about some of the guys on the golf course, but probably the best golfer out of all of them was actually Lawler. Lawler was
really?
Quite a good golfer. I went out with Jeff Jarrett quite a few times, and Brian Christopher a couple of times. Brian was known to throw a club or two, but mostly my years of USWA was just the people that I was around and some of the great wrestlers that have gone on to be superstars in the business now that were just starting their career. There was a gentleman that worked with us named the Master of Pain. Are you familiar with him?
Are you speaking of are you speaking of the Undertaker?
Exactly. He went on to become the Undertaker. Another young man whose name was Flex Cavana. Do you know who he became?
Oh, The Rock.
The Rock.
The Rock. So lot of those guys that kind of started off in the USWA years that have gone on to be some of the greatest professional wrestlers of our time. But as far as the really old school guys, I have had the pleasure of announcing Lou Thesz when he was towards the end of his career. And you talk about a wrestler, Lou Thesz.
Wow.
The man was in the ring in probably the very early 1990s. He was 63, 65 years old and was still a physical specimen, could still get around the wrestling ring like a 30-year-old man. There was probably no one that I was more impressed with than Lou Thesz, because you could only as well as he worked and moved in the ring at his age, you could only imagine what he was in his prime. He was a true professional wrestler, as far as I'm concerned. But I've had the thrill of announcing some of the greatest in our time, and probably one of my biggest thrills. I had a gentleman that named the Hitman Doug Gilbert, who was the son of Tommy Gilbert, the brother of Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert. Doug assaulted me one night, and I was just at ringside minding my own business, so to speak, and it worked its way into a kind of a tag team situation where Doug Gilbert and a young man by the name of Reggie B. Fine were tagging up, and Lawler made a phone call for me and said, I've got a police officer up here that's been drawn into the ring by the Hitman, and would you come up here and be his tag team partner? I'm in a situation where I can't be because I'm having a problem right now with the superstar Bill Dundee, and this man was gracious enough to come up and be my tag team partner. And any time that you get to walk to the ring with handsome Jimmy Valiant, you know you have reached a plateau in your wrestling. And I have had that thrill.
Wow. Well, folks, we will get to Colonel VW in just a minute. But first, Larry, I want to give you a crack at Dean here. What do you want to ask me, Larry?
Well, I'm curious, Dean, about how you transitioned from that role into actually the television announcer for OVW.
Pardon me. The nightmare, Danny Davis, his partner Ken Wayne, they were great tag team wrestlers in the USWA years, and Danny had decided that he was kind of tired of being on the road, and he wanted to give back to the sport that had given everything to him, and he decided that he was going to open a wrestling school. And I was on the police department one day driving down through a part of Louisville, and I looked into the front of a building because police officers, and that day that's what you did. You kept your eyes open for what was going on, and I looked through this front glass, and lo and behold, there was Danny Davis standing in there. And I got out of the police car, walked inside, and what are you doing? And he said, well, I've come off the road, and I've decided to start a wrestling school. And so I would stop by from time to time just to keep an eye on his building for him and to see how things were going. I was still announcing for USWA every Tuesday night at Louisville Gardens. And Danny moved to a spot over in Jeffersonville, Indiana, and decided that, as you know, one of the things about training in professional wrestling is not only lifting your weights and learning your holds, but also learning how to interact with the fans and a crowd and being in that kind of a scenario. So Danny decided that, as part of my wrestling school, I should have a weekly wrestling event and invite the fans in. And so he said, well, I could use a ring announcer. I wonder if Dean would like to do it. So out of respect, which is part of the tradition of professional wrestling, Danny contacted Jerry Lawler and said, would you mind if Dean also came over here and did this for me as well? And Lawler gave his permission. And so I went over and started doing the ring announcing for Danny. Danny was working very closely with another legend in professional wrestling, which is the Hustler Rip Rogers. And they were putting this together, and all of a sudden, one day, they said, we'd like to talk to you. We have an opportunity to start a weekly television show, and it's going to be on, I think it's, I want to say WBY, I actually forget the channel that we started on, but it was at like, I don't know, 1 or 2 a.m. on Sunday mornings.
Oh, yeah.
And that was back where you could, record it on your VCR. It wasn't quite Betamax yet, but that had already gone. But so we started that, and they basically said, Dean, we want you to be the host of the TV show. You're the only person that we know that could really do this. And I had never been in front of a television camera before. I had no clue other than to just try it. And one of the funny little stories I like to tell was that Danny was also originally the production guy behind this. So I've got the earpiece in my ear, and I'm trying to learn how to do this. And Danny is also trying to give instructions to the cameraman, and the cameraman was a young man that was trying to learn his craft as well. We were all just learning this, you know, we were rolling the dice and seeing what was going to happen. So I'm learning to talk into a TV camera and to say that, hey, this is a great night of professional wrestling. Make sure you join us here this week. We got Nick Densmore taking on the Machine, and the Damage is going to be, and at the same time, I've got Danny in my ear screaming, move the camera to the right! To the right, you idiot! To the right! It was very hard to try to learn to do that and listen to that stuff in your head at the same time. So, but oddly enough, that trained me for what we do now, because I have the earpiece in my ear, and they will occasionally tell me, you know, we got 1 minute before we have to go to a commercial, or there's 2 minutes left on the TV show, you know, that kind of stuff. And inside the crowd with myself talking to a great young man that I'm with now, I want to give a shout out to Gilbert Corsi. And I'll tell you more about Gilbert and how he started in this a little later on if you'd like. But Gilbert is a great young man that I work with now in OVW. And Kenny Bolin as well. Kenny, love him or like him, has become a part of OVW Wrestling over the years. And I have to give respect to Kenny as well. There's times that he wears a little thin on me, but I'm sure there's times that I aggravate him as well. And I've had quite a few different people that have been my partners over the years. But that, Larry, to answer your question, is basically how OVW started and how I started being the television host for the show.
I have to ask you about your time teaming with Jim Cornette as your broadcast partner, what that was like, what it was like working with him, et cetera.
Jim Cornette is one of the most fantastic minds in professional wrestling. Him and another gentleman I'll get into here in a little while. But Jim, you don't really team with Jim as much as you sit next to him and talk every once in a while when he takes a breath or he needs a drink of his Sprite. Jim could actually talk for 20 minutes, never say the same thing twice, and keep you on the edge of your seat the entire time. And once he got on a roll, it was like an avalanche, and you don't want to be standing in front of it. So I learned a great deal from Jimmy. But basically, he ran the thing, and whenever he would take a breath, I would chime in for a little while, and he would stick his finger out, point back to him, and I would shut up, and he would start.
Before we go any further, I have to ask, you know, comparing the way wrestling is now and the way it was when you first got started in the wrestling business, what do you miss about the way it was compared to the way it is?
Oh, gosh. I'm having 15 things fly through my mind here all of a sudden. what I miss about the old days were... It was, I guess, the fans of that era. You know, fans nowadays are fantastic people. They're bringing their kids into it, and nowadays it's more marketable, I guess you'd say, to the younger crowd. Back then, there was more adults that came to it. I guess because the the people were worried about bringing their children. What if, things got a little bit too out of control? There was that element of potential chaos in the crowd. There was that underlining tone of what if things did get out of control? Mm-hmm. What if somebody did throw a beer in Hillbilly Jim's face and he went after somebody, even as great a man as Hillbilly Jim was? What if you were in that position? So I think it was that little bit of potential uncontrollable volatility. A perfect example would be the concession stand brawl between Lawler and Dundee and the ones that they were fighting when it got loose, and they actually ended up in that concession stand and things went bazarak. That type of uncontrollable rawness that was wrestling years ago, and I'm sure that the people that were wrestling fans of the years of the Young Luthez and Gorgeous George and Dick the Bruiser would probably say the same thing about their era, because of the potential of having something truly erupt right next to you. Nowadays, with a lawsuit looming around any corner, they have to be very, very, very concerned about the fans. They go out of the way to make sure everybody is secure and behind all of the barricades, out of protection. And I think that allows us to bring the children into it. And that is, in fact, a very good thing, because you have to sow the seeds for the next generation. And that is the children that get to come to a live wrestling event now and watch the present-day heroes like guys that I consider to be friends of mine, John Cena and Randy Orton, the youngsters that came up through OVW Wrestling that went on to become today's superstars, Brock Lesnar, and some guys that were fantastic wrestlers and should have been included in with those that perhaps it just didn't work out for them. Like, I'm going to say the name Rico Constantino. Mm-hmm. Rico was a fine, outstanding young man. I believe he's a police officer out in Las Vegas, Nevada right now. But Rico right. Yeah. was one of the – remember the TV show American Gladiators?
Yes.
Yeah, sure do.
Rico was one of the original winners of the American Gladiator reality TV show. And that was a real feat, to be such a physical machine that you could win that. And he was one of the original winners of that. And never a finer young man in professional wrestling. For whatever reason, it just didn't work out for him completely. I never really heard all of the reasons behind it. But there are as many stories about young men like Rico Constantino as there are stories that worked out well for great men like John Cena.
Thank you. I'm glad you mentioned that about the element of danger, because I know when you were bringing guys down to the ring at the Louisville Gardens, there were no barricades.
There was one barricade. It was called Dean Hill.
Yeah.
Wow.
Trent, I'm going to kick it back to you.
Well, I'll tell you what, Larry. Dean, the owner of this network, insists that we play a commercial spot. So, Larry, let's play it right here, and then we'll talk some current WWE when we come back. How about that?
All right. Will do.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Soley? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Tempe's of Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling at the Academy Theater in Avondale State. We're also at the Masquerade every month or so. Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling. And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling. We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
We are back on OVW Overview. What a great show this has been with Dean Hill. And Ali, are you still awake? I'm just checking on you, buddy.
I sure am, Trent. And, you know, I've enjoyed this time tremendously. This last 35 minutes has been a wonderful journey into the legacy and into the life of Dean Hill. Dean has been with the professional wrestling business stretching back to before I was even born. He's been a wonderful servant of the Louisville community. He has been, you know, just a mainstay here at Ohio Valley Wrestling. And he's familiar with, in law enforcement, the phrase that, you know, sometimes, Dean, there's a new sheriff in town. And unfortunately for you and your crony Republican rich counterparts, that new sheriff is bringing law and order back to the fedora. That sheriff is named Josette Bynum. And as you saw with Mr. Martin Richardson, she's not going to deal with mediocrity, no matter how long you've been around. So, Dean, I have two questions for you to allow you to be able to salvage the position that some would say you've rightly earned as the figurehead and lead announcer of Ohio Valley Wrestling Television. The first question I have for you is, how many times have you beaten the Metal Master? And the second question is, how many times have you been the television champion?
Well, first things first, I appreciate all the kind words that you said about me at the beginning of that. That's probably the nicest thing that you've ever said to anybody, and I can only imagine that it made you throw up in your mouth just a little bit. Number two is, I have never beaten the Metal Master because I am smart enough not to get into the ring with him, number one. Number two, I'll be the first one to tell you that I'm not a professional wrestler, so that's the other reason. And the Metal Master is a great, great young man, and someone that if you have been in the ring with is a proud thing to be able to say for your own wrestling career. And the fact that you have been the television champion, I think, speaks for itself. You have been, and for quite a long period of time. Now, we could go back and look at the archives, look at the the past film footage. For those that might want to go to our website, it's ovwrestling.com, And perhaps they would find out what occurred at the end of many of those matches that allowed you to come out victorious. But at the end of the day, you still walked out of there with the title around around your waist, and you can't say anything bad about that, I guess.
You know, you're right, absolutely, Dean, and I'm glad that you're able to show and you know, express your reverence for my accomplishments, as many as they are. I just want the record to stand and to show that one time I beat the Metal Master in Heathcote, and one time I did beat him at the Davis Arena. So with that said, Dean, I hope you can come up with a better answer.
Well, you know, one time Loyola Marymount beat Duke. One time the Atlanta Falcons, before they were very good, actually beat the Green Bay Packers. One time the Mets won. So there's a lot of things can happen one time.
One time.
You know, I'd like to say something for just a second there, Larry and Trent, because it popped something in my head. I was listening to your commercial, and it was mentioning some Georgia Championship Wrestling, and I heard the name of a young man that was very good to me in my early years, and I had not heard his name for a while, and I was so thrilled to hear the name of Wildfire Tommy Rich.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
If Tommy, if you're out there someplace, I just want to say hello to you. He actually got knocked out of a wrestling ring one time, stumbled, fell into me, and laid me out on the floor. The first time I ever kissed the concrete at Louisville Gardens, and there was no person more worried about whether or not I was seriously injured than Wildfire Tommy Rich that night. He actually stayed by me for the rest of that match and made sure that that nothing else happened to me. So, and the first thing I think about is when he does his promos is somebody saying something about Dean Hill getting knocked on the ground. Just Tommy Rich was great at that, and I just wanted to say that I was really thrilled to hear that he's still with us.
Dean, Tommy is still living in Georgia and still working the occasional indie show around the Georgia area.
Outstanding. Tommy, you ever find yourself in Louisville, Kentucky, son, you give Dean Hill a call, and we'll go have a steak dinner.
Wow. What an offer that is. Well, Dean, since Ali brought it up, Josette Bynum is now in control of at least the television show of Ohio Valley Wrestling. For anybody that has not been watching OVW TV, and what's wrong with you, you can watch it free now every Thursday on the website at ovwrestling.com. The show is taped on Wednesday night. And they already have it up on the website on Thursday night. So that's a pretty fast turnaround. So if you're not watching it, start watching it. It's a fun show to watch. There's so much crappy wrestling nowadays. Watch something that's fun to watch. But, Dean, before Josette took over for the past few months, we've had dueling power figures. We've had Josette Bynum and Trailer Park Trash. We're both kind of in control and messing each other up. And let's face it, Dean, something had to give there, because I didn't think the two-power figures were working. What was your take of that when you had a kind of a yin and yang going at the same time?
Well, you never really know what's going to happen in OVW. And Josette Bynum coming out here and basically taking over the family as she did. And bringing some of the people into the family that she's brought into it. Of course, we all know that the man on the other end of this telephone, Muhammad Ali Vaez, is part of that family. And she has just decided that she was going to put her influence into OVW. And she was going to do just whatever the H she could get away with. Thank goodness for Trailer Park Trash. TPT goes back to the original days of OVW, and he is believes in the tradition of professional wrestling, and the tradition of what is OVW, and that's one of the reasons I agree with you telling the fans across the world to go to ovwrestling.com and check out the weekly television show, because what OVW is the tradition of professional wrestling, along with the newness that we bring to it, the new stars and everything, but the true value of original professional wrestling you will still find, if no place else, in OVW. And I thought the world of Trailer Park for coming out and trying to stand up to a lady. Basically, it was just trying to overrun OVW and make this, as she likes to say now, Joe VW.
Right.
Trash was willing to put he had backed away from pro wrestling. He was running the day-to-day operations there. He wasn't hitting the weights anymore. He wasn't out running to keep his wind up anymore. He wasn't trying to get the Michael Phelps six-pack swimmer's abs that some people are pointing out that they have nowadays. But he was willing to do what he had to do to try to save our business. And against who? Rob Terry? I mean,
yes.
This man is a machine. 6 foot, God, 7 or 8, 300 pounds at least, and you know, what, 4% body fat or something.
Yeah.
This guy
yeah.
is some, well, as we used to say when I was on the police department, Rob Terry is shooting size. And to put himself, Trailer Park, to put himself in there to try to save the tradition of OVW, I think speaks volumes about the kind of guy that TPT is. But the situation was what the situation was. And he unfortunately was put in a position where Jesse Godders, Mr. Pectacular, Mr. Big Brother, slid into the ring when Chris Sharp was distracted, handed Rob Terry, and let me make emphasis on that. Trailer
yeah.
Park Trash, at the position in his career that he's in, still Rob Terry, the behemoth that he is, still had to use underhanded tactics to beat Trailer Park Trash. Chris Sharp, just devastated by the situation he was put in, devastated by the fact that he had to sit there and count the 1, 2, 3 on what could very well have been all of our wrestling careers. My career, my days could very well be numbered with Josette Bynum being in charge now of OVW. Trailer Park Trash, we truly thought he was going to be fired, but Josette,
yeah.
showing how devious she is actually keeping him around to clean toilets. Danny Davis,
right.
I mean, Danny Davis, barred out of his own wrestling show. I mean, that is just insane. And we all plead with the few members of the board of directors that we know, but we don't know all the board of directors. They meet someplace off-site. There are people that are board of director members of OVW that I'm not even sure who they are. Or I would be asking them to please reconsider what they're doing right now. But they work on the facts that they have in front of them, and you know, there's parts of what's going on in professional football that I don't care for. There's things of what's going on in professional basketball that I don't care for. NCAA, don't get me started talking about the NCAA, but the board of directors that manage those things, or the people that manage those things, they make the decisions that they think are the right decisions, and the rest of us have to live with it. And right now we're living in Joe VW world.
Why can't Danny just do away with board of directors? That's the part that I don't understand.
When you form this to keep everything on the fair, to keep everything on the up and up, it was brought to Danny's attention years ago that you may want to consider to be able to look everybody in the eye and say that this is as legit as it could possibly be, that you need to take this out of your hands and put this into a board of directors. Plus, also, you know, you have multiple minds working there. You know, somebody may come up with a thought in a brainstorming situation that is something that perhaps one individual would not have thought of while trying to deal with the crisis. And so Danny at the time, and I still believe in my heart of hearts, rightfully so, I took that advice and went with it and made a board of directors, and it has served us well in the past. But just as anything is, you know, there's two sides to the coin, and every once in a while, you know, it doesn't work out in your favor. Every once in a while, it might come back to bite you a little bit. I still think it was the right thing to do, and I still have faith and hope that this will work out in the long run. But quite honestly, what may happen in OVW tomorrow, what may happen Wednesday night, I'm not sure. I truly believed in my heart of hearts last Wednesday night was the last time I would ever announce professional wrestling. Because I truly believed that Josette Bynum was going to clear everything. I thought Gilbert Corsi, who had actually moved here from West Virginia to sit next to me, which I thought was there's few Academy Awards that you get in what I do in pro wrestling, but an opportunity to talk with you guys is an Academy Award for me, an opportunity to have someone move across the country just to sit next to me at the television desk is a huge thing in my wrestling career. And I thought that Gilbert was going to lose that. I thought we were all going to be basically, for all I knew, at the end of the show last week, OVW was going to be run by Muhammad Ali Vaez.
Well, Dean, the fact of the matter is, she really hasn't addressed the announcers yet. I guess that could still come because she had so many things to address. She never talked about that. So I don't know.
Well, last week on television, as she called everybody to the ring at the beginning of it and made everybody kind of take sides. And I'm proud of every one of the young men that stood by Danny Davis. Very proud of Smooth Johnny Spade and Shiloh Jones, Alex Silva, all those young men that stood by the Nightmare. Moose.
Well, hold on, Dean. Hold on. No, Alex Silva did not. He has not given an answer.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is he walked out at the beginning.
Out.
And maybe I read something into that I shouldn't have read into it.
Well, what happened was...
at least better than Taylor Hendricks that walked over there.
Yeah.
I sure wouldn't have expected that. But what I was going to say is that at the end of that, as Josette walked out off microphone, as we were ending that segment and pitching to a break, she looked over at me and Gilbert and basically said, I'm just paraphrasing, but enjoy it while you're here, boys, and walked out. So I don't know if she's just planting a seed in our minds or if she's telling us that our days are numbered, if she's just trying to get us worried. I'm not sure. I've been in this business for roughly 23 years, and it's been a great ride. If it's over, it's over. I've enjoyed every bit of it and every man that I've sat next to at the wrestling desk.
Well, I'm glad you did. Well, hopefully you'll be around for a long time to come, Dean, and hopefully it'll settle out somehow. But yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Gilbert Corsi because I haven't always been like the biggest fan of three-man announce teams. But boy, your team just works, and Gilbert has been a big addition to the booth, I must say. So
I was leaving the arena one night a little over a year ago. And I had a young man come up to me and said, "Excuse me, sir, my name is Gilbert, and I'd like to know, is there an opportunity that I might be able to give a tape to you? Would you be able to pass it on to anybody for me? I've always dreamed of being an announcer for professional wrestling, I drove all the way here from West Virginia today."
Wow.
To meet you tonight. I've been a fan of yours and OVW, I really would love to have an opportunity just to sit down and talk with you. And I was kind of going out the door at the time, and I said, well, you know, sure, you know, give us a tape. I'll be glad to pass it on. I'm not the man that makes that decision. Jim Cornette was still with us at that time, and I said, yeah. Jim and Danny are the ones that make that decision. He said, well, I work for the Fox affiliate in Charleston, West Virginia. And he says, I'll come back next week. Well, he did. He came back next week and brought a tape. And I met with him a little longer that night, but very nice, young, personable young man. And Jim and Danny looked at it and said, yeah, you're pretty good at this. But, you know, you're in Charleston, West Virginia. Here's what Gilbert did. Gilbert moved from Charleston, West Virginia, to Louisville, Kentucky, without a job, without anything, just to come and be my partner in OVW Wrestling. And as he came here, he put a resume in over at the Fox 41 affiliate. And I would like to think, I don't know this for sure, but I'd like to think that some of the people in Charleston called Louisville and spoke to, I believe it's Bill Lamb down there, and said, you know, give this guy a listen to. And they did, and he showed what he was made of to Fox 41 here in the Louisville area, and they hired him. Which is fantastic. He, if you don't know, hosts the 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock. He's the anchor man on the news for Fox 41 here in Louisville, Kentucky, and hosts the hour from 4 to 5 o'clock and does a fantastic job, has become very beloved here in the Louisville area, and I'm thrilled to have him as my new partner. I've had everybody from, I started off with Rip Rogers, Dutch Mantell was my partner for a while, Les Thatcher briefly, I think I mentioned the Hustler Rip Rogers. I had Jim Cornette, I've had Bill DeWeese, I've had Al Snow, who was one of my, Al's a very, very good friend of mine and lives here close to us in the Louisville area, and I have the thrill of going out motorcycle riding with Al from time to time, and he was probably one of the best partners I ever had. I had the thrill of working a couple of movies called Ultimate Deathmatch 2 and 3 with Al Snow, and Ultimate Deathmatch 3 is actually much better than Ultimate Deathmatch number 2, only because there was an issue with the producer and the director, and it did not get produced quite as well as number 3. But I had the thrill of being flown to Portland, Oregon a few Januaries ago, and we filmed Ultimate Deathmatch 3 in Portland, and I got to be the co-host there with Al Snow for that movie.
Frosty James.
Actually, the cool thing about working with Al is when I went there, they got us out of the airport. I was there with the Million Dollar Man and Larry Zbysko and some of those, and we came to the hotel, and the lady came up and said, Mr. Hill, as soon as you have a bit of lunch, we need for you and Al to go with us. And I didn't know what was going on. They put us in a car, and they ran us to a sound studio, and they put us in a booth and said, here's the issue we got. We did not like the play-by-play for Ultimate Deathmatch number 2. It didn't come out the way we wanted. And so we would like for you and Al to redo the play-by-play for the in-ring stuff for Ultimate Deathmatch number 2, which I will give a shout-out to Muhammad Ali Vaez, because he was in that movie as well. So there you go, Muhammad.
Well-deserved.
Well, they took us to this sound studio and said, we would like for you and Al to redo all of the play-by-play of this. So if you want to just, the first part of it was a battle royal. And if you want to just start it and we'll do like a minute of it or something like that, and then we'll stop and let you guys kind of just get into mode or whatever, and we'll do it. And it said, well, I'll tell you what, we'll go ahead and start this, and we'll do the Battle Royal. It went about 15, 20 minutes long, and I said, we'll just do it. And if there's an issue, you yell cut, and we'll stop, and we'll reboot or whatever. And so Al and I started calling this movie because they showed it on a TV screen in front of us, and we started redoing the play-by-play. And we ran through the entire 20 minutes nonstop. And at the end of it, the director kind of threw his hands up in the air, and we were done with our segment, and Al looked at him and said, why? What's wrong? He goes, nothing's wrong. Put it in the can. And I didn't know what that meant because I'm kind of new at all that stuff. And he said, I have watched this for the last 8 months. I know exactly what's going to happen, but you and Al had me on the edge of my seat the entire time. Don't cut it. Don't do anything. Put it in the can. That's done. And so I thought, well, you know, what a thrill. But that's just how well Al Snow and I worked together. So I had Timmy Baltimore. Timmy was a great young man. I thought the world of Timmy Baltimore. Brandon's been, like I said, back into the comedy world. Now I've got Gilbert Corsi and Kenny Bolin. Like Kenny or hate Kenny, Kenny has found himself a niche in pro wrestling as well. But Gilbert's a fine young man, and I couldn't ask for it. At some point, if I need to pass the reins on to somebody, I could not have anybody better than Gilbert Corsi to do it to.
Well, Dean, just for curiosity's sake, if nobody's ever seen or heard Kenny Bolin, how would you describe him?
Kenny is a large man.
Yes.
Kenny tops out in the 450 pound area. I actually had Kenny fall on me one time, and Jim Cornette was the only person that saw the impact, and Jim actually thought I was dead. Kenny is the kind of guy that will videotape. Now, Kenny's the kind of guy that will have somebody come and videotape you eating at a restaurant, and then Kenny will figure out a way to sell it back to you for $39.95 and make you happy that you bought it from him.
I don't think he's ever bought a meal at a restaurant in his life, has he?
No.
He has, I don't know about.
Kenny is the only man that I know that is actually barred out of all of the Kroger stores in Tennessee.
The meat scam. The Jim Cornette meat scam, yes.
Elbow your money back.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yeah, you know, Dean, I have actually said on this show in the past that people should buy the OVW DVDs just for the commentary because the commentary you guys do on the DVDs tends to be a little bit looser than the TV, and I've actually had to stop the DVD just from laughing so hard a few times from your commentary. It's amazing. And I know this would never happen, Dean, but I would pay like $1,000 for a DVD of the commentary that's done during some of the dark matches. I can only imagine what it said.
I'm sure Kenny would love to sell you that.
I can only imagine because the DVDs, my God, I mean, you guys stick to the stories and it's great, but well, some of the tangents that are going on the DVD is just the commentary. It's worth it just for the commentary. Trust me, folks.
I'm honored that you enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. I really look forward to doing it. This is something that when they handed me that microphone in 1988, that I never truly fathomed. I never approached this with, boy, I'd love to be a ring announcer or I'd love to be a television host to a TV show. All of a sudden, one day, there I was. And I guess I was just smart enough to keep coming back every week. And I've been blessed in my wrestling career, even though You know, you never know when something that you think is the worst thing in the world is actually going to end up being something that opens up an entire new thing for you. And the night that the Persian pariah held me in the camel clutch and the golden Ayatollah shaved off my mustache, I believe the phrase that was coined at that time was raped me of my manhood.
Ooh.
I went home that night to my wife, Bess, and I'm a very lucky man. She is a decade younger than me. I came home to Bess, and she had never seen me without my mustache, and I had my hand over my face, and I moved it, and she said, "Oh, my God, you look 10 years younger." And when you're in your 50s, you'll take 10 years where you can get it. And my daughter had never seen me. My grandchildren had never seen me. And everyone actually thought that I looked younger without it. So, Muhammad, my wife would like to say thank you.
No problem. There's more where that came from. Don't worry, Beth.
For those of you that may not have seen how that ended, the shave in the cage, which I'm sure they would like for me to say is available at OVW.com. A shave in the cage ended up with me getting Ben Hameen handcuffed in the chair and actually shaved his beard off of him. And at the end of that, my good friend Nightmare Danny Davis pulled out a little bit of mustache wax because I had got to the point where I had still Ben's mustache was still there, and I left just a little bit of a tag on the end of each end of the mustache, and I actually took some mustache wax and I turned him into a handlebar mustache wearer. So at the end of that match, I was able to put the handlebar mustache on the golden Ayatollah, and that's the best he ever looked. And I understand he actually had a girl hit on him that night for the first time.
Wow. Well, Dean, I have noticed though that just recently you're going the goatee route here. Just recently.
Oddly enough, something that I had never thought about in my life. I actually had a gentleman call me and offered me a part in a movie. I got pulled into the Ultimate Deathmatch side. I had an opportunity, and Al Snow opened a door for me to get into the Ultimate Deathmatch thing. But that was just like pro wrestling. I was calling a wrestling event. This is actually something totally separate from anything in pro wrestling. The guy had seen a thing. He asked me to come down and read for it, and then I read for it. And one of the scenes was about a death that happened to a young lady, and then the other scene was a total rant that started off with "you stupid blah blah blah" and went downhill from there. And they really liked my spin on that. And then they heard that I had done some stuff in pro wrestling, and they YouTubed me. And of all things that came up was back in 2005 or something like that, where a young man by the name of Johnny Jeter had finally, as Popeye the Sailor used to say, an old cartoon show from years ago, "I'd stands all I could stands. I couldn't stands no more." And I actually lost control and did something that I was not very proud of that day. I actually I dropped the F-bomb. And they saw that on YouTube, and they approached me and said, "We think that you would be great for this part. We actually want you to portray what would be considered a bad guy." They asked me if I would let my hair grow and if I would grow some facial hair. So that's kind of the reason that I'm doing this right now, and I'm just finally getting to the point where it's quit itching me. It's been driving me crazy for about 3 weeks.
Well, Ali, don't get any ideas, by the way. So don't let this perk you up at all. I did want to ask you, Ali, about the family real quick. I know you guys are on top of the world. Joe's at Bynum in control, but, you know, I don't know, Ali. There seems to be just a little bit of dissension with you because you took the microphone and wanted – was set to address the situation with you and Damon Olivencia, and she kind of blew you off to a degree. And I don't know, are you kind of like in the back of the kennel of the family, or what's going on there exactly?
Trent, Ali just blew us off. No, I think we lost him.
Oh, we lost Ali. Okay, well,
yeah.
He's got good timing when he blew us off, didn't he? This one,
yeah,
I asked him a good question.
He dropped just as you were asking the question.
So he'll come back. He'll have an answer. But Dean, you did mention Johnny Spade. Johnny Spade, the current OVW heavyweight champion. It's been interesting. Angel's first two title defenses, Jamin Olivencia and Chavo Jones, have both been against fellow good guys. Kind of interesting. But now with Josette in charge, we'll see where that goes. But give us some thoughts on Johnny Spade, Dean. I know he's had a long, hard road in OVW, hasn't he?
One of our, not necessarily original, but back in that period, Johnny came to us just a very raw young man that had a dream like so many, that had to really go through a lot just to get an opportunity to get onto the roster, let alone to get onto the television show. Then left pro wrestling for a while. Went through some things in his personal life, as a lot of people do, and decided that once he got on the backside of that the one thing that he really missed was pro wrestling. He got back into it, went around the United States a little bit, felt as though that he had lost his direction, that there was something missing in his wrestling world. Walked in the door one day and said, "Would you mind if I came back here to rekindle the fire?" And there was never any doubt. I mean, Danny is like a father to a lot of these young men. And
yeah,
for Danny, it was like a long-lost son coming back in the door. It was not a matter of, "Would you mind?" He couldn't even get the words out of his mouth before Danny said, "Welcome back. Glad to have you." And Johnny has used this to rebuild the fire, and it didn't take a lot because Johnny's fire is just under the surface a little bit. Johnny's a great young man, but I think if you was to go back a few weeks, there was a moment that shows you the type of guy that Smooth Johnny Spade is. Danny Davis decided to have made a brand new heavyweight title belt.
Right.
Johnny Spade was out there. He was the brand new heavyweight champion, and Trailer Park had the opportunity, the thrill of bringing out this new title belt and brought it out to Johnny. Now, we had kept that a secret. Johnny, none of the wrestlers knew about it. The secret was only known by me, Danny, and Trailer Park. And he brought this out here in a bag and pulled it out in front of Smooth Johnny. And if you could have saw the look on his face, the pride that came and overwhelmed, tears came into his eyes because he was so honored to be the first man to ever have that title around his waist. And a lot of things can happen to you in your wrestling career, and there can be a day at the end of it where you wonder if anybody remembers you. But there will never, ever be anybody other than Smooth Johnny Spade that put that title around their waist for the first time.
Yes, sir. That's excellent. Is Ali back, Larry?
He's back.
Did you hear my question,
you know,
Ali?
Yeah, I heard your question, and I'm really seriously considering calling the attorneys down in Georgia of, I believe, Peterman and Troy, because every time I get an opportunity to speak on this podcast, I'm getting cut off. And, you know, Larry, I don't know if this is a reflection of you. I don't know if this is that blue truck from Halliburton coming in and messing with my ability to, you know, speak my mind, but quite frankly, I think this is getting kind of out of hand, guys.
Guys, well, I'm just glad to hear that he's not using the other law firm that he always used, which was Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe. Muhammad, you are a man that has always set himself aside from the rest of the pack. You have always been, like you or dislike you, you have always been an individual. You have always stood out like the only weed in a pure field of clover. And you had pride in standing there by yourself. You had pride in being the man that you are. You had pride in walking to the drummer that you walked to. But now you play second fiddle to Josette Bynum. That's got to eat you at your core.
Dean, he plays both fourth fiddle. But go ahead, Ollie.
Look, Dean, all right, look, I know what you're trying to do here. And let me just preface this by saying that while in your opinion I may be playing second fiddle to the new sheriff in town, the wonderfully beautiful and very generous talent arbitrator, Miss Josette Bynum, let me remind you, Dean Hill, that there is no other superstar in Ohio Valley wrestling history, be it in the TNA developmental period, be it during the independent period, be it during the WWE developmental period, or be it during the sacred origin period, that was able to sell that building, the Davis Arena, out like I did with Michael Hayes in January. So, if you like to point out the fact that I like to play second fiddle to people, I like to point out the fact that I'm 3 steps ahead of everybody, and I saw this coming months ago, and that's why you didn't see me contacting any kind of legal representation to get out of my contractual agreements with Ms. Josette Bynum.
You're doing a very good job, Muhammad, of making sure that you give Josette all of her due. You might want to look in the mirror and take a napkin. I think you got a little bit of brown on the end of your nose. But you have to keep in mind one thing. If Josette, I mean, the position you're taking now in OVW, if Josette is now the new sheriff, that makes you Barney Fife.
Well, you know what? That's fine, Dean. You have your perspective. You might say there's a little brown on my nose, but, you know, very soon there'll be a little gold around my waist. That's okay. And if it comes down to it, I would much rather put my support behind a classy woman like Miss Josette Bynum over a piece of trash like Frank Miller any day of the week. I mean, for God's sakes, who wears a fedora and suspenders? Have you seen the Papa John's commercial? Get real. Frank Miller is lucky that he's still driving the ring truck. Frank Miller's lucky that he's still allowed in the building. And quite frankly, Frank Miller is lucky that Miss Josette Bynum doesn't have him doing every odd job around that building. Because
you
she
said
could.
That you were going to have the gold belt around your waist very soon. Don't you have to get Josette's permission for that?
And you know what? Maybe I already have it, Dean. Maybe I already have it because... Unlike you, I might know my future, Dean, and unlike you, I may know that I've got an ace up my sleeve, whereas you, my friend, you don't know what your hand that's already been dealt. I mean, you are really up what they call the creek without a paddle.
Well, actually,
Danny Davis isn't going to save you.
Well, Dean, I just must say, though, Ali could probably claim that he's a tag team champion right now if the family rules still apply.
I mean, look, belt here, belt there. There's a lot that I could claim. I mean, let me remind you that I am the only person on this podcast who has pinned the Metal Master twice, once in E-Town and once at the Davis Arena. So
yeah,
accolades speak for themselves.
Well, Trent, the first thing that pops in my mind is, you know, the insurgency is what made Muhammad Ali Vaez the man that he is today and the name that he is in professional wrestling today. But the insurgency wasn't just Muhammad Ali Vaez. It was also Omar Akbar. Is Omar not a little bit upset that Muhammad Ali is getting all the attention? I mean, Omar was just as big of a member of the insurgency as Muhammad.
Okay, here we go, Dean. Now you're doing it again, Dean. I know. I see what you're doing. And just like I pointed out with the cage match, see, Dean, I'm prepared for this because I usually play this game with Trent once a month.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think I'm losing you. Click.
See, yeah, okay. Here we go. See, as much as you'd like to drive a wedge between me and my cousin Omar, the problem that you seem to fail is that you think that my career at Ohio Valley Wrestling, stretching over 250 episodes, is just limited to a brief period of time where I defined myself through a tag team. However, as much as I love Omar Akbar, he is not a five-time television champion and the longest-reigning television champion that the company has ever seen. I am.
What a smack in the face to Omar.
Okay, Dean. All right. You can do what you want here. You can try to talk some smack and get Omar upset. Omar was the first guy that called me when I beat the Metal Master to congratulate me. I don't remember you calling me.
I'm going to jump in here because I want to talk some facts for a second, Ali, with you. I'm really confused at your assertion that Jamin Olivencia is a coward. You threw Olivencia over the top rope in full view of Chris Sharp, and you want to complain? What in the hell is that?
I don't know what you're talking about. That did not happen, Trent.
Isn't this where you're supposed to lose a connection and drop your call?
Yeah, that's pretty much where you all become losing the connection. Yeah, this is what happens. Yeah.
Okay, I see what's going on. Listen, guys, if you really think that I'm wrong, you can log on to OVWrestling.com and you can purchase the DVD from the Saturday Night Special for $9.99,
right.
And you can review the footage yourself, and you can point out the fact that I am right. In fact, Jamin Olivencia is a coward. He's a punk. He's a clown. He's a hypocrite. And once again, he took the easy way out. Instead of facing me like a man, instead of doing what he needed to do to get business done, instead he took the shortcut out.
Mr. Baez, we don't even have to buy the footage. That wonderful package that was put together by the departed Mr. Richardson showed very clearly what happened at the beginning of this week's TV.
Well, I guess that's why he was fired.
Oh, good. I'm glad it's just fired. I heard you say departed. I thought he died.
No, that's probably a couple weeks away.
Well, I'm going to segue here, guys, and we're going to talk about a guy that you are both very familiar with and probably have a lot of different thoughts on. Let's talk about Michael Hayes for a minute. I know you have a lot of thoughts on Michael Hayes, a one-legged professional wrestler, lost his leg in combat in Iraq, has gone to the top of OVW, certainly is good for business. Go ahead and tell us a little bit of what your thoughts on Michael Hayes.
Michael Hayes, I hope to actually get through this without choking up a little bit. Michael Hayes is probably one of the finest young men that I've ever had the privilege of knowing. I mentioned to the crowd one night at Davis Arena, ladies and gentlemen, your children may ask you at some point in your life what a role model is. Like Charles Barkley used to say, don't tell your children I'm a role model, I'm not a role model. It's not your sports stars. It's somebody like Michael Hayes. Michael Hayes is actually a great role model. Someone that crawled through the desert from an explosion that not only took all of his fellow soldiers' lives, but took part of his leg and did the damage to his lower body as it did. For him to come back and to fight as he did through the adversity of just learning to walk again, let alone that, but the mental things that Michael Hayes has to go through, the nights where he lays his head on the pillow and he sees over and over and over again that explosion, that he hears the cries of his fellow soldiers as they went through what they went through. And for him to use professional wrestling, let alone OVW, as the tool that he used to get his life back on track is an inspiration to every person going through adversity anywhere in the world. And it doesn't have to be professional wrestling that you use, obviously. Some people may use tiddlywinks. I don't care. But to use this to get themselves back into living is an inspiration to every human being, let alone every American. And there is nobody that I think more highly of than Michael Hayes. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, and he has gotten OVW so much pub. In fact, last Saturday, April 7th, front page in the Louisville Courier-Journal. And Ali, I like that article. You had a lot of good quotes in the article, Ali. It was very nice.
Did we lose him again?
No, I think he's here.
Nope, I'm here, guys. I'm here.
Okay.
I'm in the process of returning my rental car, so I apologize.
Okay, no problem. I actually said something nice about you that time.
Uh-oh. Well, you probably were lying, Trent. If you don't mind, what was it?
I was talking about Michael Hayes and the article in the paper last Saturday, and your quotes.
Complete misrepresentation. Complete misrepresentation. They didn't even interview me.
Oh, come on.
I never even spoke with the Courier-Journal. I don't know who this character was. I mean, it made for a really nice story, so, you know, I can't complain that much, but I never spoke with a reporter. I'm actually kind of upset because online, at least they used some pretty good footages of me in the swimmer's build. At that point, it wasn't looking as good as it is now. At that point, I think I was about 8.5% body fat. Right now, I'm around 6.2. But, you know, in the actual newspaper, the Courier-Journal, they didn't have any photos of me. I think they had one photo of my back, and they probably would have sold a couple more, you know, copies of that paper if they had featured my chiseled physique. That was the one part of the article they got right.
Dean, you had it right. Click. My God, I say something nice, and look at this guy is just, you know, by the way, Ali, I just want to mention that Anne-Marie, Friday night, brought over here a ferret passing for a dog. I understand since you've been gone, you've had her slaving, feeding your alley cat. So, geez Louise, what's
up? Listen, Anne-Marie is a wonderful lady, Trent. Don't bring her into this, and definitely, definitely don't talk about my peanut like that.
Oh, my God, that's supposed to be a dog? Dean, my girlfriend brought a weasel over here. She's dog said it was a weasel, Dean. It was a weasel. Trust me, this was not a dog.
I'm not surprised. I am happy, however, to hear that that Muhammad is down to how much body fat did you say you have left?
I'm at 6.2, Dean, and I got 2 weeks to go, and I haven't even dehydrated myself yet. Man, I look good.
6.2% body fat, and it's obvious that you'll never be able to shed that because I know that that's basically in your head.
Wow.
Well. Most of it I carry at the announce desk, Dean, as a matter of fact.
And Ali, go ahead and tell us. Your fitness competition is, what, 2 weeks away?
Yes, on April 28th, my first ever physique competition. It's going to be held at the Louisville Expo Center as a part of the Derby Festival. And I'm coming in looking to make an impact like I always do. You know, I've got a lot of supporters in the locker room. Dean Hill is not one of them. But, you know, Kenny Boland has already promised to let me go to Golden Corral with him, and he'll let me pay for the victory dinner. So,
that's a shock.
Yeah, I have not necessarily committed to that. He told me that if I behave myself, maybe I could get an autographed 8x10 of John Cena or something. So, you know, that might be something to look forward to. But I've already also committed to doing the June 2nd GNC Classic. So I think I'm going to continue my foray into men's physique competitions because they don't make a lot of swimmers' builds like this, guys. And, you know, I'm going to get on this train while it's hot.
Well, Ali, I hope you win. I hope you place. But I don't know if you heard Wednesday night, but when you came out, at one point a brief – it didn't last long, but a chant broke out, eat a sandwich at you.
Well, you know what? I'm sure it did because a lot of the folks in the Davis Arena – I'm sure have a lot of sandwiches that they can spare, judging by their waiting lines. So, you know, it's not a surprise to me that a lot of people want to hate on somebody who's got enough discipline to chase a dream and enough discipline to forge their body out of the fire of their will, and that's what I specialize in doing. I specialize in proving people wrong at the Davis Arena every week, and I specialize in proving Dean Hill wrong every time he tries to call one of my matches the biased way that he normally does.
Oh, brother.
I just still think it's very disappointing that you just, you know, push Omar down all the time. You know, he was a great member of the insurgency, and it's all me, 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 me. And Omar, if you can hear me, there's a lot of people that think you actually carry Muhammad Ali Vaez.
Wow. Wow.
He's not going to be happy when he hears this, Dean. He is not going to be happy when he hears
this. What, you don't even let him listen to the... You're not even letting him listen?
What do you mean don't let him listen? He's a grown man. It's not stopping him from listening. He chooses not to spend his time this way. Listen, there is no better man I could have ever had as a tag team partner than Omar Akbar. But
you say ever had? That's kind of like past tense. Is it over?
Well, you know, we've moved on. I do my thing. He's doing his thing.
So you no longer need him.
No, that's not what I said at all, Dean. He's pursuing other interests. He's into MMA, mixed martial arts. He does a lot of acting. He's a man of many talents, just like me. We're not defined by the role that Danny Davis forced us into, Dean. We have other skills.
Does Ben Hameen know that you no longer need him, too?
There was never a need situation, Dean. Let me make this straight.
So you're basically saying that you've never needed Ben Hameen.
No, and they never needed me, and I never needed them. We had a common goal of taking infidels like you, as we used to say, down a notch.
So you basically carried both of them. So you basically carried both of them.
The only thing I carry, Dean, is my bag. That's it. My own gear bag. I don't carry Omar Akbar. I don't carry Ben Hameen. I didn't carry Turk. I didn't carry you. I didn't carry anything. Except the television title, more days than anybody else in the history of this company.
And Trent, let me give a shout-out to the young man. I was talking earlier about the shave in the cage, and I failed to mention Turk Selleck's name. Turk,
right.
Great young man, one of the few people that I ever had an opportunity to be a tag team with. And Turk saw the writing on the wall and realized that the Golden Ayatollah was someone that he did not want to be with, and went off into his career, and he's doing great things right now. But, Turk, if you're out there, buddy, I think you're a great young man, too.
Well, and just since Ali keeps bringing up the TV title, just real quick, Ali, what were your thoughts this past Wednesday with Silvio? Told
Joseph Bynum
no, and pretty much took out the whole family single-handedly.
Well, he'll get his. Don't worry. He's in the same club as Dean Hill, as somebody who's cruising for a bruising. And Miss Joseph Bynum is not going to let this thing slide under the table. I assure you, if I'm three steps ahead, Joseph Bynum's six steps ahead. So don't worry about Chris Silvio. The family has plans for Chris Silvio because, contrary to popular belief, the family has never been stronger. And with this figurehead at our helm, we are poised to really take control of this company and run it the way it should have been run for the last few years.
Trent, the first thing that pops in my head here is, you know, this is a bit of an odd situation. You're talking about Muhammad's, you know, his background, where he came from, the insurgency, Ben Hameen, the culture that is Muhammad Ali Vaez. And I wonder how his fellow, the men in his family feel about the fact that he is actually bowing down to and taking orders from a woman.
Listen, okay. Here we go. Here we go with this old crony Republican mentality. Look, the year is 2012, okay? I'm not bowing down before anyone. I'm smart enough to realize that Miss Josette Bynum has a position of authority which she was smart enough to finagle through a divorce. And I'm going to honor the terms of those contracts because it's in my interest to do so, Dean. Just like it's in your interest to ride motorcycles with Al Snow and to lick Danny Davis's boots and to, you know, be a crony in general for the Republican Party, because that's what serves your interests. Right now, Josette Bynum is serving my interests. Right now, being affiliated with the family is serving my interests, just like being affiliated with the insurgency back in 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, fit my interests at the time.
So you just said that Josette Benham is filling your interest. She's basically doing what you need her to do. Josette, if you're listening, you might just want to take from that that basically Muhammad Ali Vaez is allowing you to do what you're doing right now, and that the only reason that you're in charge is because it serves Muhammad Ali Vaez right now. If it didn't serve Muhammad Ali Vaez right now, you might very well find yourself wearing a burqa.
See, Dean, this is why you are a cop and not a lawyer, because your power to equivocate is unparalleled. You should have been a politician, sir. I didn't say that at all. We have an agreement. We have a mutually beneficial relationship, Ms. Josette Bynum and myself, just like Rob Terry, Jesse Godders, and Rudy Switchblade, and
so
now
you're equal.
Half the locker room.
So
I
you're
equal. I wouldn't say we're equal. Look, she handles what she handles. I handle what I handle. I'm not going to take anything away from Ms. Bynum. She's a seven-time women's champion. She's a former
she
TNA superstar.
She blew you off.
She did not blow me up. Trent, now you're over here. First you tried to shortchange our attendance counts, and now you're trying to start a fire over here. Come on, Trent. You're always trying to start a fire somewhere. I mean, this is ridiculous. This
okay.
is like a handicap match.
Okay,
Trent, there's one thing that we do have to appreciate right now. Muhammad Ali Vaez has put himself in a spot where he's in this conversation that he's in, and we still actually have him on the telephone. We haven't lost his signal.
Yeah, that's a breakthrough. And, Dean, can you believe that we've been going on air here for pushing almost 2 hours? Can you believe that? So, Dean, I'll tell you what, can we get you back on down the line, several months down the line? Because I've got like a billion questions for you, and I'll never get them in today. So I'm going to – at some point I want to get you back on the show, Dean, because you have been just a treasure here today. This has been fantastic.
Well, Trent, this was an honor for me. I appreciate it very much. Like I said, in professional wrestling, there's only a few accolades that you truly get. Being in the OVW, the first class of the OVW Hall of Honor was an honor to me. Being on your show, I think, is a thrill, and I would be glad to come back on here anytime that you'd like.
That'd be great. Well, just real quick, Dean, let's just do just a couple of word associate, name associate. I'll throw a name out here and just give me a couple thoughts, okay?
Sure.
Brock Lesnar.
One of the most impressive men in the world to me, especially physically. Brock Lesnar, I think, could be anything that he wanted to be. The fact that Brock Lesnar left pro wrestling to try to be a professional football player long before he tried to be and became the UFC heavyweight champion. And I think Brock Lesnar would still be the heavyweight champion of the UFC world if it wasn't for the, I think it's called diverticulitis situation that he had there for a while. That's documented, I believe.
Matt Capitelli.
Matt Capitelli, a young man that had the world in front of him and an unfortunate situation in the ring made him go to a doctor and they found something that could have taken Matt's life. He found it. They were able to take care of it, and he now has a great life ahead of him, but he was a class act and still is today.
Go ahead, Larry. Throw a name at Dean.
John Cena.
John Cena had superstar written on him from the first moment that I ever laid eyes on him, back when he was the prototype. John Cena, there's what makes the difference is somebody that can not only have the physical look, but the talent, the wrestling capability, and then can they speak? I mean, that's the reason the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, had the career he had, because there were certain people that could do two or three things but could not talk. So John Cena, I actually saw John Cena do a piece on film back when he was training about a tag team situation, and his tag team partner was going to be a fruit cup of all things. And he actually spent almost 3 minutes talking about Fruit Cup. And to be able to sit there and talk about that and have it make sense, I realized when I saw that that there was nothing that could hold John Cena back.
Go ahead and throw another one, Larry.
Jason Wayne.
Jason Wayne is probably the closest thing that I have seen to when I first laid eyes on Flex Cavana. Jason is, I think, has a lot of potential ahead of him, and I think basically if he stays on track, that he could be super big in the business.
Paul Heyman.
Paul Heyman actually took me to the next level of my career. Paul Heyman put me in a position where he brought something out in me that I did not know was in me. I owe at least a good portion of my wrestling career to what Paul Heyman saw inside of me, and he pushed a button in me that I did not know was there, and something came out of me that I didn't know was there, and I owe a lot to Paul Heyman.
Wow, interesting answer. Flash Flanagan.
A young man that was willing to put his wrestling career on the line, as well as his physical ability to get up and walk the next day, on the line every time he got into the wrestling ring, whether it was at Louisville Gardens or whether it was in a National Guard armory in Resume Speed, Kentucky. Flash Flanagan brought it every single time, and one of the wildest, most devastating, most impressive hardcore matches I have ever seen was actually between Flash Flanagan and Trailer Park Trash at Louisville Gardens.
Dave Bautista.
Bautista was a machine. When he was the Leviathan in OVW, there was nobody with a bigger potential in professional wrestling than Dave Bautista.
Last one on history today, Dean, Randy Orton.
Randy Orton, a legacy. His dad. And Randy, I mean, just if ever there was, you know, the men in professional wrestling that you talk about, their sons coming into professional wrestling and making a name for themselves, I think of Jerry Jarrett and Jeff Jarrett. I think of Tommy Gilbert and Hot Stuff Eddie and Doug Gilbert. There have been a lot of men who were great professional wrestlers who their sons did not have the medal that their fathers would have hoped that they had. Bob Orton does not have to worry about saying that. Randy Orton is one of the biggest presence in modern day professional wrestling, and I am honored to say that I knew him at the beginning of his career.
Well, gosh, Dean, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. We will get you back on because, like I said, I got so much more to ask you. I just want to, on behalf of Larry and Ollie and I, just thank you so much for doing the show. It's been great, Dean. Thank you.
It's great to be a part of OVW Overview with TVD and the Switchmaster Larry Goodman. I'm Dean Hill. See you at ringside.
That's awesome. Wow. We'll be back May 20th. We'll be our next show with Stephen Platinum, the guest. And Mr. Platinum is a student of the game. He's going to watch a bunch of OVW and give his thoughts. And the one after that, just to let you know, down the line, June 17th, right here, the psychedelic superstar, Chris Silvio. So we got a lot of good things coming up. And thank you, Larry. Thank you, Ali. Again, thank you, Dean Hill. Everybody, keep watching OVW, OVWrestling.com, or come out live to the Davis Arena or any event if you live in the Kentuckiana area. And until May 20th, I can't say any better than Dean. So we'll see you at ringside, folks. Goodbye.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast. A production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.